The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey, folks, and welcome to Typology, the show in which we explore the mystery of the human personality through the lens of the Enneagram. My name is Anthony Skinner. I'm the producer of the show. And returning to the show today, we have psychotherapist, thought leader, coach, and master Enneagram teacher, Beatrice Chestnut. That's right, Beatrice is with us, and today we are covering Enneagram 6s. So hang on for the ride. There is a lot of great content in this episode. You're going to love it. We're happy to have Beatrice back with us. That's it for me, Anthony Skinner. And now for the host of our show, Ian Crum.
Beatrice Chestnut, welcome back to Typology.
Very happy to be here.
Author of The Complete Enneagram, not the Partial Enneagram, but The Complete Enneagram, 27 Paths to Greater Self-Knowledge, a characteristic or virtue, in a sense, self-knowledge, that is in short supply these days. So it's a timely and wonderful, wonderful book. A couple of weeks back, we spoke about ones and twos, and today and in our next episode, we're going to be talking about two of my favorite types, sixes and nines. These are wonderful, wonderful human beings, and I want to start off by asking the question, there are three nuanced expressions of nines, right? Three subtypes, and we're going to jump into those in just a moment, but I want to ask, is there a few things that we can say about all sixes in general? You know, some characteristic that appears or themes that run through the lives of all three types of sixes. Why don't you start and I'll chime in.
Okay, so first I need to say that of all nine types, there are probably the fewest things that you can say about all three sixes that would hold true for all three of them because they are the most different from each other. Them and the fours.
Right.
They are so different that I do struggle sometimes, like in introductory workshops, before I've introduced even the idea that there are these three subtypes and that they're different, to say things that apply to all three, because in some ways there are some big oppositions. It's a little bit like fight or flight. Right. Is an opposite thing when it comes to coping strategies for dealing with fear. So I do kind of want to say that it's a little bit of hard work to kind of say things that apply to all three. But that said, I will say that sixes generally are focused on scanning for threats and risks, wanting to be prepared in case the worst happens, predicting and anticipating what might happen next so that they can be ready to meet whatever challenge, problem, threat occurs.
Right.
So they're proactively kind of thinking ahead, what's going to happen next.
Right. That's that ability to see, you know, the downside, right? I sometimes say nobody can champion the downside like a six. You know, yes. they have this ability also, unfortunately, to see danger when the threat level is actually quite low.
Right.
Right. And of course, they all share the passion of fear, which some sixes tell me is experienced by them more as anxiety, a vague sense of apprehension about what might happen if were this to happen, right? I want you to tell folks briefly, in your words, what a passion is and why it's so important to be very familiar with your passion, because many people focus on the traits and characteristic of the type rather than what's at the root of it. So why don't you jump in and maybe share that a little bit?
Yes, the passion is like the core motivator of the type. It's usually unconscious, and that's the tricky part, but it's a emotional motivation, and it's like the core emotional driver of the type. Now, the root meaning of the word passion is to suffer. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit like what keeps the underlying suffering going. But of course, the personality is a structure that grows up to keep us from being aware of suffering. Right. So in a way, it sort of keeps us at a low level of awareness by driving us to focus in particular ways based on what this emotional passion is all about for each type.
Right. And so self-awareness, self-knowledge around the passion, this is why it's so important. As Carl Jung once said, the problem with the unconscious is it's unconscious. Right? And so until we can surface to the passion to conscious awareness, where we can begin to work with it, then our lives, it becomes autonomous and is able to govern our lives from the shadows, you know, without any interference from us, right?
Yes.
I also think with the passion, I go back to what you were saying, is that it's the source of so much suffering. Mm-hmm. You know, we tend to, I think, equate the word passion with something positive, right? Like, oh, I'm passionate about this, or I'm passionate about that. Everyone needs a passion in life. Well, that's true when we're talking about the, you know, better definition or the preferable definition of passion. But in this sense, we're talking about the word almost the way we would talk about it when we talk about crimes of passion.
Exactly.
Right? It's this... wow, it's this powerful force that's not in service to our interests, right?
That's right. That's right. We don't control our passion. Our passion controls us.
Exactly. Well said, everybody. I want you to hear that. Take that home with you, if nothing else, and start to work on understanding your passion. I think another thing that sixes tend to share in common is a kind of skepticism and suspiciousness of others, like the intentions of others, the hidden motivations of others, particularly of authority figures. You know, are they for me? Are they trying to pull the wool over my eyes? Or I think they're really behind me? Or, you know, there's just this ambivalence, right, about authority figures. And I want to jump in too a little bit later on, because I think if any number on the Enneagram needs to know itself well these days, in a culture of anxiety and of demagogues, it's sixes, right? The sixes have really got to get a handle on it so they can make really good decisions, which of course is a struggle for them as well, right?
Right, right. Yeah, and I totally agree with you. And I one of the ways to think about it is that sixes are sensitive to power dynamics. And it's important to note that they deep down really want a good authority. Mm-hmm. They're almost looking for a protector. It's a little bit like the replacement of the original archetypal protector, the father. There are father issues there. And so it's like, I'm looking for a good authority to protect me and to be someone I can trust. And yet, there is this underlying fear and anxiety that causes them to be very sensitive to any sign that that person who has power over people is not to be trusted, is going to do something bad. And it's a vulnerable position to be, to be dependent on an authority. And so it's like they have really a good radar for sensing. And again, like you said, sometimes they see things that aren't there. That might be more the projection angle on it. And I think probably another thing all sixes do is they engage the defense mechanism of protection. And they can go everything. It can be everything from suspecting the authority to questioning the authority to rebelling against the authority.
Right.
And it, again, depends on the subtype, what they're more likely to do.
So let's jump into subtypes, because for those who haven't listen to this series, it's important to remember, if you're not familiar with them, that subtypes are nuanced expressions of each type. They're what arise when our dominant instinct collides. And I like that. You know, this idea, like, it's like two atoms slamming into each other and then creating three other, in the collision, three other varieties of the core type. And what I love about them, if I were to give an illustration, is, you know your core type, and that's wonderful, fantastic, right? But it's a low resolution picture, right?
Yes.
If you're a wings person, some people are, some people aren't, to differing degrees, you could argue that, oh, once you know that, you get a higher resolution picture. But when you get to subtypes, for me, you get an evolutionary leap forward. Like, you go from, 2K to 4K in your understanding of the type. And that's why they're so important. You want to say anything else about subtypes?
Yeah, I think you said it. It's like they give us more specific information and especially about our growth path.
Right.
And this is so key to know, because two different people of the same type can have actually opposite growth paths.
Yes.
And the six, I think, is the prime example of that, where one person, for instance, needs to get more in touch with anger and strength and confidence. Another kind of subtype of six needs to get more in touch with vulnerability and stop being so strong and sort of appearing overconfident in the face of threat. So this is one of the biggest reasons why I think you need to know your subtype, because if you're going to use the Enneagram for growth, you need a good map forward that it gives you really in a really great way, but you got to have the right map. And it also, I think, helps people find their correct type in the first place. A lot of the subtypes show us that not every type looks like what you think it will. And of course, that's the idea of the counter type that you and I know well. And so knowing the subtypes really helps people find their right place in the first place, but also helps us know in a very nuanced way. And I liked what you were saying, higher resolution. I think of it in terms of like a map. If you have a map, from one place to another, and there's only a couple of roads, versus having all the side streets in there and kind of knowing more specifically how to get to where I need to go.
Right. Yeah, very good. And, one of the questions, before we jump into the specific subtypes that I think will be helpful to people that I hear a lot, is, can your subtype change? In other words, is it fluid, or is it like core type something that never changes?
Mm-hmm. I think it can change somewhat, but not completely. I think in my experience, these are deeply rooted tendencies. This is the survival brain.
Yes.
The emotional part, the limbic system part of survival, and the instinctual sort of lizard part of us, instinctual. So it's a deeply rooted sense of how I defend myself in the world. Now, that said, the whole goal is to become more aware and be able to moderate the ways that our instinctual impulses and our subtype behaviors just kind of become very automatic and reactive.
Right.
So I do think we can balance them out somehow, but I don't very often see people changing completely from one subtype to another.
Yes. I had a friend of mine once say, and they were a sexual subtype, they said, it's amazing how fast I can look like a self-pres type when someone's chasing me with a gun. Right? So to your point, this is stuff that's in the bone and the blood, right? It's primal material.
Yeah.
It's in the bone and the blood. We all have a need for survival. We all are hell-bent, right? That's our number one goal, right? Is making sure we make it to dinner, right? We want to make it to dinner tonight. But we tend to rely on one of these more than the others, or more focus on it, and then over-rely on it. We become overly fixated on it to the point that it's almost like a trick of evolution, isn't it? It's like we really needed this on the Serengeti, but in the current environment, the over-reliance on it becomes very problematic and gets us into trouble a lot of the time, right? And again, so important to know that for that reason, which is why, you know, understanding instincts too is so important. Let's do that one time. We'll just jump into what instincts are and how they operate inside the human person. All right, jumping in. Let's talk about self-preservation sixes, who are sort of termed warmth, right? They're sometimes called warmth. These folks have sort of the highest amount of anxiety and fear. Is that right?
Yeah, it's a little bit like separation anxiety. Mm. It's a sense of not being protected in the world. So when you mix like fear with self-preservation, this is the six that, you know, the impulse is more to run and hide. There's more awareness of fear and anxiety. There's a more of a sense of needing allies, friends, protectors, and kind of coming together with, you know, bunching together in the face of danger. It's like, I'll be more okay if I can find someone to hide behind.
Right. So it's all about forging alliances, right? There's this friend of mine who is incredibly funny, right? And is a connector of people, is, you know, very much about creating relationships where the secret or the silent unconscious contract is, I'll help you ensure your survival if you help me ensure mine a little bit. And the way that gets played out, right, is through friendliness and being supportive, and also, oddly enough, right, being funny. Because when you're funny, right, it forges an alliance and creates a sense of other people wanting to be in an alliance with you. And, you know, so there's a kind of, isn't there kind of, would you say, an ingratiating component, especially with the authority figures in their lives for the self-play six?
Yeah, I think they're leading with a friendly, soft approach. And I do see that self-preservation sixes have a kind of distinct sense of humor. Mm-hmm. It's almost like, if I can entertain you, you'll like me more. And it is a kind of like looking for someone to protect me. And if I'm charming or warm and friendly, I'm more likely to attract friends and protectors than if I were kind of scary or hard to get along with.
Yes, and we're going to see a six that is not like this at all in a moment, right?
That's right.
So these are folks, too, that really kind of see that their survival depends on others, and they tend, therefore, to be very concerned about confrontation or aggression or, I don't want to say, I guess, conflict, but I think of it more as anger and confrontation and aggression, and also of disappointing other people. And I personally experienced that myself. I have a real fear of disappointing other people as a self-pres four, but for an entirely different set of reasons, right? So I think that these folks typically, because they have this desire to please others and to forge alliances and relationships, they can often look like twos, right?
Yeah, we often say they're heady on the inside and heartful on the outside. Mm-hmm. So yes, they can look like twos. They can either not be very in touch with their anger or not express it very often, or only with people that they're close to, and fearful of other people's aggression.
Right.
The idea being, if you get angry, someone's likely to get angry back at you, and that's right. What they're very, very tuned into avoiding.
Yes. In fact, I have a six friend who liked like a subtype of twos. The moment there's any conflict in the relationship, they're very quick to fix it. You know, they really want to get in there and patch it over pretty quick. Mm-hmm. You know, I think another feature of this six is they seem to lack confidence in their own inner guidance system, particularly around making decisions. And so there's a lot of self-doubt, self-questioning, and also questioning other people, right? Like, are we okay? Is, you know, things good? You know, they almost sometimes assume that because they question relationships or ambivalent about relationships, that the other person is ambivalent about relationships, you know? And so there's like a cocktail party of voices in their heads. There's a lot of stuff going on in the head of a six, right?
Yeah, the inner committee. I think that sixes, self-preservation sixes are full of doubt about everything. There's a desire for certainty, but a sense of it's just not possible.
Right.
Because they question everything. They even question their questions, or they doubt their doubt.
Yes.
And so it's a kind of sense of always wanting to find something, you know, the decision, the thing they can stand on, the sense of certainty, but it's never being able to find it. It's like an endless loop of questioning and questioning and not being able to kind of know anything. And that's part of what defines the self-preservation six, as opposed to some of the other sixes,
right,
who can be more certain at times, even though there's also a struggle with certainty.
Mm. All right, let's talk about the virtue. And for everyone to understand, I think it's important that we understand the virtue as the antidote to the passion. It's the opposite of the passion. And, you know, St. Ignatius of Loyola would often talk about the agere contra, right, which is this spiritual discipline of going against your natural disposition, right? So in a way, it's like going against the passion, right? Working with the passion. I don't think people should ever be at war with themselves per se, but I think this ability to say, okay, my journey is to move from fear, and I think you would say, to the virtue of courage. Unpack that a little bit.
Right. Yes, the journey from vice to virtue, as it's sometimes called, is being more and more aware of the passion and then aiming for its opposite, the higher virtue. And so in this case, it's courage. And courage in this case means not the absence of fear, but feeling fear and moving forward anyway. That's true courage. Being in touch with what scares you, but not letting it stop you. And when sixes do their inner work, often they really can manifest an enormous amount of courage, because they can move forward in their lives. They can do things that scare them without letting the underlying fear thwart them.
Yes. And I often get excited when I see sixes. I have a friend of mine who said, I'm working on making decisions without the need to consult with others, to trust myself. He sometimes makes a list of past successes. It's like they forget their successes. Like, it's like every time they hit something, it's like, and they tend to catastrophize what might happen should they make the wrong decision, right? And so it's like, okay, so you buy the wrong car. It's not the end of the world, right? You can always sell it and get another car, right? And yet, and then you say to the sixes, remember when it didn't work out and you were still okay? You know, like, remember those times, right? And I think that helps too in friendships with sixes, to encourage them and to avoid stepping in and assuming the reins of authority in their life and telling them what to do. It's like if you tell my son this, even though he's not a six, when he expresses something that he's working on and we can tell he's over relying on our opinion. We'll say, you know, I have every faith in the world. I have all the faith in the world that you can make this decision, and it'll be a good decision, you know, or the decision will be what it is, you know? So I think that's fantastic. Richard Rohr says something interesting about the virtue here. He doesn't actually use the word courage. He uses the word faith. Now, obviously, Richard's a priest, and so that might explain that. But I do think there's some value in the word faith, because at one level, do you ever think you can muster enough courage to face all the anxiety-producing things in this world? Whereas faith, perhaps, as an addendum to it, which is this, if people are inclined that way, to say, I believe that there is a higher loving force in the universe that no matter what happens has my back, right? It's, you know, come what may, there's some other force in the universe that I can depend on, right, for my personal survival, or to make sense of life as it presents itself. Okay, moving on to socials, right? Call Duty. Why don't you start on them, and I'll hop in.
Okay. So the social six is very different than the self-preservation six in this respect. They are less uncertain and more certain. In fact, they can be too certain. Mm-hmm. So uncertainty and doubt make social sixes anxious because they're kind of looking for the right way to do something or something they can believe in that can give their life a sense of structure, reference points. So they can look a bit one-ish actually because they can be really responsible. And that's the social piece is like feeling responsible or over-responsible to do their duty or know what their duty is so that they can sort of quell their fear by consulting some sort of outside authority. So this is the six that looks for a good authority and then adheres to that authority and follows that authority as a way of coping with fear. But sometimes that authority isn't necessarily a person. It can be an ideology or a system of thinking, religion, science.
A theology, right? Something exactly. like that. I'm very fascinated right now culturally with this group. You know, if we were to do the goofy game of, okay, what cultures sort of embody different types or subtypes, I would have said at one time that America was a social three country. You know, it was a country all about success and image and getting ahead and working hard and, you know, just, and of course, looking good while we do it, right? We are a very image conscious country, but I think we have migrated toward being a social six country. I think we're increasingly a social six world. Right. At least in many, many places in the world, because these types and like they rely on authority figures or systems to protect them. Right. So there's this kind of like, well, pastor told me to do it this way or pastor says we should do this or we should do that. And you're like, well, what do you say? Well, you know, pastor says, you know, the answer is always outside themselves. Right.
Yes,
or
yes.
It's like, or it's a political figure. Right. Mm-hmm. Or it's the like-minded compatriots in the group. Right. The group says this. And so they have this danger of falling into groupthink and it can become mindless groupthink. Mm-hmm. Right. It's
yes.
I'm out of touch with what I mean, I'm not. The group is going to protect me. The leader is going to protect me. Mm-hmm. The leader sets the rules. I must therefore follow the rules of the leader. In order to, find my way in the world and be safe. They also, I think, maybe you can speak to this. They tend to can fall into this us versus them thinking, this sort of black and white. These are, they're on our side or, you know, they're for us or they're against us, right? They're
yep.
on our side or they're evil. Right.
Yeah.
There's this kind of they can, if they're not careful, fall into the demonization of the other. Right.
Yeah. 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 Right. I agree. I think there's really something in what you're saying. I think my slight tweak on that would be I do think we're a social three country that is living in six as a way of trying to find security during threat when people feel under threat.
Right.
And so I do definitely think, you know, this sector of our society these days that you can see is kind of attracted to an authoritarian leader, like wanting someone to fix it or fight for us or tell us what to do in a way that I think at certain eras, we might not have. We've been kind of surprised that we have that in us as much as we have been seen to having that in us. And I think you're absolutely right. We see that a lot in religious communities. Like there's a safety in what the pastor says or what our teaching tells us, what the religion tells us. And so absolutely, I agree. And it's a kind of needing of rules or a father figure. And that's sort of the solution to an underlying anxiety or fear about what's going to happen. So it's like a going into having too much of a true believer in this or that, being too black and white, exactly as you're saying, having sort of who are the good guys and the bad guys and how can I feel safer being with the good guys and against going against the bad guys.
Yeah. And of course, when this instinct runs off the rails, when the wheels come off of this, when fear is so prominent, people in groups make bad decisions when they're based on fear.
Yes.
You know, which is why, as you know, and Richard Rohr was the one who said this to me. He had he was teaching in Germany, and a couple of Germans came up to him and said, "You know, we are a sixth country." You know, that, and that's why, you know, obviously history has shown what happens, what you're willing to be blind to in order to follow the leader, right?
Yes.
As a group, and to have a sense of security and empowerment, but of course, fragile stuff. Okay, the growth path, the transformational path for the social six.
For the social six, it's owning their own authority.
Mm-hmm.
It's not projecting it out so much and needing that outside authority for protection, realizing that you need to take that back yourself. And so it mitigates against being such a true believer in this or that. And it's a little bit about not being so responsible to everyone else, not being so locked into doing your duty, and being a little bit more in touch with the heart and the body. Social sixes tend to be very intellectual, and it's a little bit like Dr. Strangelove. It's like too much of a sort of systems thinker,
right?
And not enough consulting the feelings and getting more into the body and instinctual impulses and letting yourself be a little bit more, as Naranjo says, Dionysian.
That's a good way of putting it, isn't it? All right, let's talk about sexual one-to-one sixes here, okay? And by the way, I love a distinction that you make, because I find these things sort of helpful when we're trying to delineate different subtypes, right? You would say, or Naranjo would say, you'll have to correct me on that, but that the self-pres six is warmth, is warm, whereas the social six is cooler, and the one-to-one six is hot. Right?
Yes.
They're hot.
Yes.
And why? It would make sense, right? Because we're jumping into the countertype here that is called strength, right?
Yes.
It's the hotter expression of the three. And I think this is also a fascinating type, because they move against the passion of fear with that strength and that power. And I have a quick story. I'm a big story believer. And I have a friend of mine. His name was Mark. I haven't seen him in many years, but he was a mountain climber. And he was a pretty self-aware guy, I think. He didn't know the Enneagram, but he did know himself pretty well. Every year on the same date, he climbed the mountain El Capitan, which is like one of the hardest, most frightening climbs in the world. I mean, it is just a sheer rock face. I don't know how many thousands of feet it is or whatever, but it is terrifying, right? And I mean, literally at one point on the way up, he would have to pitch a hammock and sleep on the side over like 1,000 feet underneath him, like, you know, right? And I said to him one time, I said, "Boy, you are really brave." And he goes, "No, I'm not." He said, "I am so afraid of dying. I am so afraid of death that the only way I know how to deal with it is by trying to conquer it." Right? And I think there is a kind of a picture a little bit of that sexual one-to-one energy there. It's like, I'm going to conquer fear by overcoming it, right? Why don't you unpack that a little bit more? I think that's kind
of fascinating. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. It's the one-to-one six, the sexual six. This is the counterphobic six. This is the six that goes against fear with strength and moves towards risks, exactly like you're saying, it's almost like what's more anxiety producing for this six is kind of hanging out and waiting for something to happen. It's like, no, they need to go out and meet the threat. That's when they feel sort of more safe, is if I'm going into action to do something about it. And so this is the idea that the best defense is a good offense.
Right.
And it's like they react to fear and vulnerability with anger or aggression or assertiveness.
Right.
And they often don't experience the fear at all. They don't feel or register the vulnerability. I worked with one one counterfubic six one time who said, oh, I just skip right over that part, you know? And Nirano used to say they look courageous, but it's the courage of having a gun. You know, it's not true courage because true courage comes from being in touch with the fear and then moving ahead anyway. But it's almost like a reactivity in the face of fear, where the fear is not experienced, but it's like they go into this reactive, more aggressive mode to try to conquer, exactly like you said, that danger. Although I have to say, your friend, this may be another interesting piece we can discuss some other time, is they that person on El Capitan may also be self-preservation repressed, right? So not only is he does he have this sort of sexual energy that's going to go out and conquer this mountain, but to hang on, to be able to sleep, you know, in a hammock hanging off the side of a cliff, self-preservation may be repressed such that that sort of doesn't register. Like when you or I think of doing that, like, you know, what came into my head is no way in a million years would
No way. But I'm a self-preservation four. So you can count on that being the case, you know. And maybe one day what we'll do is we'll talk about repressed instincts, you know, because that, again, in terms of just self-awareness and self-knowledge, is so important. And also understanding that as part of one's transformational growth path. And so it's such an important, wonderful, again, another piece of this remarkable system called the Enneagram. I think one of the things that's interesting about this type is they preemptively intimidate people.
Yes.
You know, I've seen this again, I don't want to stereotype. And listen, sixes, I know you're feeling a little beaten up right now, and we'll talk about that in a second. But I've seen this in bars, you know, kind of tough bars. I'll see a guy in the bar, or even, you know, a woman in a different expression. And they're the ones that kind of sometimes will hit another guy's shoulder as they walk by them. You know what I mean? And there's this kind of like, don't screw with me. I'm the baddest ass in the bar. You know, and what looks like, as you said, what looks like courage, and this is what obviously is, you know, anyone listening would know that it's probably easy to mistype this person with an eight, right?
Yes.
And of course, the difference is eights are fearless, whereas this type is being driven by fear, which, and I hate to say this, is why sometimes they're bullies and eights are not. Eights want to find the bully to beat them up for going after the underdog. This type, I mean, at their worst expression, enjoys the hierarchy of saying, I want you to be the underdog. You know, I'm the big dog on the porch and you're not.
Wow.
Right?
Yes.
So important.
And I liked what you said about the guy at the bar. Kind of. I've heard a lot of counterphobic sixes say, I can be scary. I can move toward threat. But I've never gotten in a fight.
Interesting.
You know? Yeah. So it's like there is that pro, and it kind of works. You know, there's this proactive, I'm going to be intimidating to keep what scares me at bay. But it's as Nirano said, the bark is worse than the bite. There's a way that it's like a looking scary, but there's fear behind it.
Yes.
And again, often is unconscious.
Yes. Okay, let's finish up. Let's talk about the transformational path for the 1-to-1-6. Why don't you get us going, and I'll have a few thoughts, I'm sure, as well.
Okay, so for the self-preservation six, it's very much about becoming more confident, working on that self-doubt, and becoming more secure, especially in yourself, about your own capabilities. Learning how to cope with doubt and get out of that sort of endless circle of doubting everything and doubting the doubt. When I would work with self-preservation sixes, I would often say, you need to go out of that mental loop and into your emotions or into your gut. And so sometimes I would be with a client who was going around and around and around about all these things, and he couldn't make a decision and couldn't find anything that was secure. And then I'd say, well, what does your gut tell you? And he'd immediately come up with something, right?
Wow.
So being able to really recognize the only way out of that thought loop is by, it's almost like taking, you know, with an old time metaphor, taking the needle on the record and actually taking it off and putting it in a different groove. And being able to really step out of the endless questioning and recognizing you're only answering questions, you're not answering any. And so you need to almost go to a different channel to get a different kind of information. And it's, of course, owning your own authority, being able to get angry in a productive, constructive way that's based on, I know it's important to me, I trust myself. And then, of course, learning to trust others as well as yourself.
Yeah. I've told this story on Typology before, but I don't think I've ever told it to you. So I'm going to indulge myself here. There was a study done out in the field in Africa by a group of, I guess, anthropologists. And what they wanted, they took a group of chimpanzees, right? And I don't know if you call them a pod or a family. I'm not sure of the term. But they observed them for a while, and they identified those members of the family that exhibited the highest degree of anxiety. And they decided to remove them from the group to see what would happen. Wow. So they took these four or five chimps out of the group, right? And they came back 6 months later and found out that the rest of the group was dead.
Wow.
Wow.
And here's the reason why. There were no sentries at the border who were going, is that fire? Wait a minute. Right. Did you hear something stepping on a stick? Was that a lion? You know? And so I always tell people, like any type, sixes, when they're not very self-aware or lack self-knowledge, can be problematic, but I wouldn't want to live in a world without them. You know what I mean? Like they got a role, and if it's managed correctly, they are really invaluable to our species. Well, B, we're going to talk about nines in our next episode, and I'm really looking forward to it because I find this number. Well, first of all, I have a lot of nines in my life, and I'm married to one, and I have a child who's one. I have I love nines, and but they are far. I mean, they're complicated creatures too. I mean, they are. You know, they may be what you see is what you get, people. But there's also a lot going on here. So I can't wait until we talk about it next time. B, thanks for being with us on Typology, and members of our family, really. May you have love. May you have joy. May you have peace. May you have healing. May you have rest. Until next time.